Hi everyone and welcome to the Retro Raw Rundown. I'm Kenny McIntosh, as always joined by my Michigan partner in crime or something, Sandra. Hi Sandra.
Hello Kenny, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well now that my computer has started.
Good. Well, the other day was my mom's birthday, so I took my mom out for afternoon tea today.
That sounds very posh and lovely.
It was. I had a scone, and because I've got a personal trainer, I immediately felt bad about eating it. So, and then we went and saw this movie, Jackie, which is Natalie Portman about Jackie Kennedy.
Oh, so, how is that?
Yeah. The film's not great, but her performance is tremendous.
Okay.
So, it's like, yeah, it's worth seeing, but it's not like... It's hard to explain. Like, the film lets it down, but she's so good in the role that, like, she props up a bit.
Okay. So, like, the writing and stuff just isn't very good?
Yeah, it just wasn't very strong. But she was fantastic as Jackie Kennedy. Like, you know, it's like that thing where, like, when Meryl Streep did Margaret Thatcher and the Iron Lady, like, half an hour in, you go, fuck, that's Meryl Streep. You've forgotten, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So, good on Natalie Portman for that. But yeah, we're here to talk about Raw episode 194, January the 20th, 1997, the night after the Royal Rumble. You can listen to our Royal Rumble review on Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes, where we talk about everything from the Royal Rumble, from the Alamo Dome to Shawn Michaels defeating Sid to the Royal Rumble finish. It's all there, so you can go and check that out over there. But this is the night after the Royal Rumble. Now, last week, Sandra, we were pretty down in the episode, right? We were pretty down on last week's Raw. We were just kind of, meh.
Yeah, because it was just kind of there. Nothing was happening. It just kind of felt like, oh, yeah, we had to do another Raw before the Royal Rumble. We're totally focused on the Royal Rumble. Let's just throw some guys out there, and they will do basically nothing. And it was pretty crap. This week, however, was not at all.
This was... I don't want to over-egg this. I think this is the best episode of Raw so far in the entire run that we've done, for me. This was just, like, in terms of what they did at the Royal Rumble storyline-wise, this show, you know, take away the fact that Bart Gunn fought for it and nobody gave a fuck. Like, take that away from it. Like, this was so good.
But even Bart Gunn fighting Farouk, you got some fun Nation of Domination stuff in.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, everything, there was purpose to the stuff, but the main angle, like, you know, the problem is, you know, if you read Dave Meltzer's newsletters or you listen to podcasts with people, like, it's very difficult to get a proper picture on 1997 WWF. And I mean, when you're watching this show or the Royal Rumble, it's very hard to believe that they are planning on doing Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, because that doesn't feel like the story.
It doesn't feel like the story at all. Like, at all. Shawn Michaels felt like more of an afterthought on this show. I mean, he wasn't even on the show. They kept showing footage of his entrance, but that was it.
Well, because he'd had the flu, I'm presuming that Shawn Michaels was probably just like, can I just not work the next night? And they're like, all right. Sid wasn't on the show either. You know, just... I guess angry from losing the match to Shawn Michaels. But, like, what they did, I mean, when you think about it...
Well, they said that Sid had a concussion. Was that, like, real or no?
No, he didn't really have a concussion. They may have just said it to get it over. But, like, the thing that's interesting is, like, and it'll be interesting for you watching this leading into kind of WrestleMania 13. The story of this main event picture is so good. Like, there are legit... six guys in the picture, and all six of them could be involved. Mm-hmm. You know, which is when I think wrestling's at its best. But let's kick off the show. We have Vince. So they show us clips from the Royal Rumble, and then Vince McMahon basically says, you know, Steve Austin, according to the referees, won the Royal Rumble, but the footage says otherwise. And then, like, the Monday Night Raw theme starts. And Vince is still talking, and he's not even anywhere near finished.
Mm-hmm.
And he just keeps talking, and, like, to a point where I was like, when's he going to go, Monday Night Raw? Because that's obviously fine. And it was, like, a good 10 seconds into the Monday Night Raw intro video before he left.
Yeah, there was, like, a lot of intro. Like, a lot of intro. I mean, he did have to fawn over Shawn Michaels for a good while.
He did. Well, I mean, it's Vince McMahon. He has to... has to throw that in somewhere.
It's required.
It is required. But so we get Vince McMahon, Jerry Lawler, and Jim Ross, who now has just decided it's cowboy hat time. He's decided it's fine. He's just going to be JR. And they're like hyping up the show, and the main event's going to be The Undertaker versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, which, by the way, like, consider like nowadays what the main events are, and like a Raw main event was Undertaker and Stone Cold Steve Austin,
which felt huge. But this is, I think, where they mentioned that Psycho Sid was supposed to face Steve Austin tonight, and Psycho Sid has a concussion from being hit with the camera by Shawn Michaels last night, so he's not here tonight, but he should be cleared by Wednesday. So I assume they have some live event or something on Wednesday, or do they tape something else on Wednesday? I don't know, but they say, like, I remember that very specifically. Oh, but he should be fine by Wednesday, because it kind of struck me like, oh, he has a concussion. Give him a couple days. It'll be fine. Like, nowadays, it's just so weird watching that kind of thing back then, just because, I mean, they didn't know concussions and, like, the severity of concussions and whatnot. So to have them mention concussion and be like, oh, he'll be fine on Wednesday. Don't worry about a thing.
Yeah, he just needs a couple of days, and he'll be cool.
But so Stone Cold was supposed to face Psycho Sid. He's now facing The Undertaker.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, they like to... But again, you know, that's the funny thing is, like, instead of just doing Undertaker versus Steve Austin, they make out like they were going to do Sid and Austin, and then write Sid out. So it's kind of cool to, like, have these kind of stories that gives it a more sports-like presentation, because you're like, well, this guy can't wrestle because he's got a concussion, so...
Well, and also, Psycho Sid versus Steve Austin would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? Because Psycho Sid just lost the championship, and so if he faces the winner of the Royal Rumble, that could set up some really interesting stories, right?
It could. This whole show is about potential interesting stories.
Yeah, and the details. The details that it gets so, so right. I'm so excited about this. Like, it was finally a really good episode of Retro Raw again.
Well, the thing is, so basically Vince and JR and Lawler are all doing their intro, as they normally would do, hyping the main event of Steve Austin and Undertaker, when Bret Hart walks out. Again, I don't know how he's 40 years old here. He defies age at this point. It catches up to him later on, but, like, at this point, you know,
he looks fantastic. He looks incredible. I mean, granted, he's like a year older than current John Cena, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, John Cena also looks fantastic, so.
He does, for sure.
But, like, yeah, I mean, Bret Hart looks so good, and it's weird because... Like, I was listening to you and David talk about WrestleMania 9, and they, like, got Randy Savage out of the ring at 40, and Bret Hart is 40 here.
Well, what's also interesting is that, like, so Vince McMahon, what really fascinates me is, you know, Vince McMahon in, like, 1992 decides he wants to go with the youth movement after the steroid trial. That's kind of, like, his thing of, like, right, I want to move on, I want to get a new breed of wrestlers. And, I know, like, Ric Flair had come in, he hadn't really drawn on top. Part of the problem was they didn't really build the Hogan and Flair feud that well. Mm-hmm. You know, that should have been a dream feud, right? Like, NWA guy, WWF guy. Like, but for whatever reason, it just didn't click. And, like, in 1992, a lot of stuff, like, ratings-wise and all that stuff, started to go down. So he, like, made this call. I think the last batch of guys to go was, like, the Ultimate Warrior and the Bulldog got fired in, like, November of 92, and then Flair was told to just go back to WCW. You know, Vince just said, I'm not going to renew your contract because if I do, I'm just going to make you a mid-carder. So if you want to go back to WCW, it's fine. So Flair goes back, loses a match on Raw in, like, January of 93, and then Vince is all in the youth movement. So, like, he tries to get Randy Savage out of the picture, so he'll just be an announcer. But at the same time as this, he brings back Bob Backlund, who is older than Randy Savage and far, far more blander than Randy Savage. And then, to make it even worse, I found when Jimmy Snuka died, I was reading Dave Meltzer's Observer, you know, like, obituary, I guess, mm-hmm. on him. And, like, I didn't know that, like, I knew Jimmy Snuka had been in WWF. He came back in, like, 89, and he left in 92, and I thought that was kind of the end of his run. But he apparently returned in 1993 for, like, one Raw, because they were going to bring him back and make him look a regular again. He was 49 years old.
What the hell? Like...
So this is September 93, and then we get into 1994, and again, Randy Savage, you know, he gets a WrestleMania 10 match with Crush and all that, but, like, Randy Savage is so fucking good. And he's not getting any matches. And then the main event of the King of the Ring 94 is Roddy Piper and Jerry Lawler, one man with an artificial hip, and another guy who is a Memphis legend, but they're both still older than Randy Savage. So the moral of the story is, Vince McMahon's rules make no sense.
Yeah, seriously. No sense whatsoever. Because, I mean... It's something that kind of struck me because I was like, why would you get Randy Savage out of the ring at 40 when, like, I mean, just looking at the landscape of wrestling in retro Raw time and in current Raw time, like, I love the fact that currently we have this new era kind of thing going on. I think they say the words new era way too often, but I like mm-hmm. the fact that they're actually focusing on future talent again, and they seem to be because some of the guys are actually kind of on their way out or being part-timers and they have to focus on different things, right? But there's mm-hmm. still a place for John Cena, and there's still a place for people like that because you can't just, like, I don't know, it can't be all or nothing, I guess.
Well, the other thing is, so, like, Bret Hart here with Steve Austin is actually proving that point. Because, like,
yeah.
if you look back at the history of wrestlers, wrestlers only really get over, and the true sense of being over, by defeating the old guard.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way it happens. Daniel Bryan beat John Cena at SummerSlam. He beat the old guard.
Yeah.
Bret Hart didn't get a chance to beat the old guard, and he suffered for a good couple of years, but then he was so good that he kind of, like, overcame it. And now he's putting over Steve Austin, the new guard. You know, so that kind of cycle always is what works. So sometimes, you know, when you find that, oh, why is this new guy not getting over? It's like, well, who's he beating for the fans to know that he's, you know, like, a top guy,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think once that happens, fans, you know, not you and me, because we are probably more hardcore, I guess, than most people, but to the casual fan, you know, they're going to accept somebody's a top. Let's say AJ Styles, he's a top guy because he beat John Cena.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it happens. And I think that's one of the, when wrestling is at its best, that should be what happens.
So interesting about the story that we're seeing unfold here on Retro Raw, because that's exactly what's happening. Stone Cold Steve Austin is definitely on the rise here. And again, like, it's interesting watching these, kind of knowing where it goes and knowing where it leads, because obviously we know the story of Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's very, very cool to see it in its prime, I guess, because, mm-hmm. oh boy, is this good.
Yeah, I mean, so Bret Hart storms out here at the beginning, and, like, everybody plays their part so well. Even Jerry Lawler sells this with his facial expressions so well. Like, Bret Hart starts, you know, saying he's out here to talk to Vince McMahon. You know, he came back for an opportunity at the WWF Championship. He was screwed at the December pay-per-view. He gets into the Rumble. He wins that. He's screwed again. And, like, Lawler's looking kind of like, what the fuck is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Which completely sells it.
And Bret Hart's out in, like, jeans and a shirt. He's not out in gear. He's not out in, you know, he looks like he's going to wrestle. He looks like he was not scheduled to be here. And he has a bone to pick with the World Wrestling Federation.
Exactly. And then that leads us to Bret just quitting on the spot. Because he basically says, you know, it doesn't look like I'm going to get my opportunity, so I quit. Drops the mic. Goes to leave through the crowd, because he's quitting, so he doesn't go to the back.
Just leaves
to the crowd. Vince is trying to talk him off the ledge. I mean, it was just all so perfect. And then you get Steve Austin, who is coming out, and he's just going nuts as well.
Well, first his mic doesn't work.
Yeah, his mic doesn't work, and then he threatens to beat up the guy with the mic.
You're going to get me a piece of equipment that works here, son, or do I need to whoop your ass?
Oh, so good. And... So this whole opening segment is just kind of Bret Hart's quit and Steve Austin's kind of trying to defend. And it's a very weird thing because Steve Austin did a total chicken shit thing at the Royal Rumble, but he's still a badass. See, he's doing both, and I don't know how he gets away with it.
Well, it's because interesting too here, because when does Stone Cold Steve Austin come out to talk about what Bret Hart had to say? He doesn't come out to confront Bret Hart in the ring. No, no. Steve Austin waits until Bret Hart has left through the crowd to come out.
Yeah, and that is the sort of the thing that's interesting about Steve Austin, and what I also think is the kind of genius of the angle is, like I say, he does so many chicken shit things, but acts like a badass.
And I don't dislike, I still believe that he is a badass, And it's that fine line that he's walking so perfectly, right? Like,
nobody's ever walked it that well.
It's weird when you see how often he takes a powder, how often he, like, doesn't want to confront someone, or, like, his face when Bret Hart came out at the Royal Rumble, you know, that we talked about. He knows that getting into something with Bret Hart might not end well for him. So he's going to avoid that confrontation, but he is absolutely going to talk shit just as soon as it's safe.
And that's the beauty of it. The thing that's interesting, because you obviously knew Steve Austin coming into this, but you knew the big moments, you know? Knew the sort of like the greatest hits CD. And now you're getting to go, oh, that part of the album really flows with that big hit or whatever. You know, like, it's now you're starting to get that that part of it, which is cool.
Bret Hart here, I want to mention how much better he's gotten on the microphone even since, you know, his when he first came back and he gave some of those promos that I just wasn't really feeling at all. And now, it probably has to do with authenticity and him being kind of frustrated, right? And rightfully so. Like, all of the stuff that's happened to him, here he lays out the exact sequence of events that has led to him being very frustrated. You know, he was promised a chance at the World Wrestling Federation Championship belt. He says that phrase so many times in this. But, you know, he got a chance to face Psycho Sid, and then he got screwed because Shawn Michaels got on the apron, and then he was like, oh yeah, the World Wrestling Federation was like, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it, you can enter the Royal Rumble, so I only have to beat 29 other guys to get another shot at the World Wrestling Federation Championship belt. And then I do that, right? He's like, I win the Royal Rumble, but the referees don't see it, so I'm screwed again. And he says, like, he's been screwed by the World Wrestling Federation, he's been screwed by Vince. It was really interesting to hear him say that he's been screwed by Vince here in this instance.
The thing is, it's baffling to watch all this back and think that Montreal wasn't part of the plan.
Right?
Like, it looks like it's part of the plan.
It really does.
And the thing about Bret is that he's so believable, and like, you sympathize with him, but at the same time, because Austin's so good, you're kind of starting to be like, oh, stop whining, Bret. You know, like, it's this weird thing, but like, he's completely right in every single thing that he's saying, but it's now starting to turn into a little bit of a whiny thing.
Well, and the interesting thing is too, Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out and does a little bit of a whiny thing too, about how he's been screwed. And about how he's had to be, you know, he's been held down for 7 years, and how he hasn't gotten his opportunity either. And now he is the winner of the Royal Rumble. So both of them are whining, and it should just be like this horrible thing, right? Where you're like, okay, everybody's just whining and complaining, and why should I care? But it's not like that at all, because whatever line they're walking it perfectly. And oh boy, I care so much about both of them.
It's only going to get better. And so Vince McMahon leaves, he leaves the commentary, but he never actually gets on to commentary. He just leaves.
He stood up to go and try to talk to Bret Hart, although he didn't try very hard, to be fair.
Well, what was so great about that was, like, you could see it was the conflict of Vince wanting to try and save Bret, but also not wanting to, you know, air all of his dirty laundry in public.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think he played it really well, you know, and it's, so Vince leaves, JR and Lawler are like, what's going on? We have no idea what's happening, because they still, like, you know, they're saying, you know, Steve Austin's won the Royal Rumble, but they're not 100% confident that he's going to go to WrestleMania to face whoever the champion is. So they don't want to say too much. It's just, it's a very well told, I mean, the thing to remember about this is, like, kayfabe was still completely a thing at this point. So this whole angle is just really sort of new, you know. This is arguably more pivotal than like the CM Punk pipe bomb,
mm-hmm.
because by that point that stuff had been done, you know. It's just the fact of he did it for the second time, you know, like coming back round again. But this was the first time where Bret Hart's calling it Vince, he's quitting. Great TV, absolutely great TV. But what we did learn, Sondra, about the World Wrestling Federation in early 1997, is that, you know, nowadays you can just get a tag title shot willy-nilly. But in 1997, even if you've beaten, like, tons of tag teams and pinned the champions, that only gives you a non-title match.
Yeah, it's true.
So we get Doug Furness and Phil LaFon against British Bulldog and Owen Hart. It was cool. I think they go on to have better stuff, but like it was like a 10-minute match. It was fine in the end. Obviously, Owen Hart, being you know the dick that he is, ends up hitting Phil LaFon with the slammy, which goes into the Bulldog Power Slam. So they pin and retain in a non-title match. But something I thought that you would like during this match. Was Jim Ross had been given a piece of paper and told, right, Jim, you know, I know that the Bret Hart situation, the Steve Austin situation is going on, you do need to sell that to the audience, but you also need to sell them the fact that when Raw's finished, there's two episodes of La Femme Nikita.
What even was this? And they kept mentioning Robin Hood, too.
They did, well, yeah, she's not a wimpy Robin Hood. And then literally JR had the best line. It's like, she's got big arms, watch it.
You can tell he gives zero shits about trying to sell La Femme Nikita, right?
But oh, none.
He absolutely has to keep mentioning it. And this happens throughout the show, because they keep putting La Femme Nikita graphic up. And, I mean, it's so funny, because nowadays on Raw, like, they have to sell so much stuff. Like, brought to you by Diet Mountain Dew, and of course, like, tune in to Psych after this with The Miz, and whatever, right? Like, that's just constant throughout today's programming. It wasn't so constant throughout 1997's programming.
No.
And you can tell, because JR is just like, what am I doing?
And I'm so glad they kept this stuff in. Yeah. So glad.
It's great. Like, wasn't there a thing with Robin Hood? Like, the reason they were mentioning it, wasn't there some, like, I don't even remember what it was. Was there, like, an episode that went off the air, but you had to wait until after Robin Hood to, like, see the culmination of it or something?
I'm the wrong guy to ask, but...
Okay. I mean,
because I always remember, like, in the UK, and people who are, like, my age in the UK will remember this, like... On, like, WWF a lot of times on Sky One, which was, like, an entertainment channel.
Okay.
Which would show a lot of, like, American TV shows. So, like, Sky One was where you would watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Xena Princess Warrior and all this sort of stuff. So I always think of those kind of shows synonymous with WWF just because they would kind of be advertised during it or they'd be on after it or whatever. So, like, I thought Xena Princess Warrior... Xena Warrior Princess. I thought the Xena Warrior Princess was like the big kind of like, here's a female strong character show first. Was La Femme Nikita as big? I don't know why we're getting into this, but I guess just to finish the thought. So
honestly, I don't even really remember La Femme Nikita. Like, I would go with Xena Warrior Princess personally, I guess. That's the show I remember better.
Well, there you go. It's been settled.
But that's I didn't answer. Watch, like, a lot of normal TV when I was little. We've been through
this. Oh, I forgot you had the mad Christian parents.
Yeah.
Can't beat it.
So, I mean, I would never have been allowed to watch any of that stuff.
I just love this idea that, like, the one time your mom and dad were like, okay, fine, you can watch wrestling, and you turn on, like, Fully Loaded 98 and Sable gets her tits out, and they're like, nope, that's it. Turn back off again.
I mean, the only time I ever even remember, like, flipping to wrestling at some point, I think there were Nitro Girls dancing or something. My dad was like, that is wrestling. Turn that off right now. It's like, okay. I didn't even know what it was.
I love the adventures of Mini Sondra. So Owen Hart and the Bulldog against Furnace and LaFon, what did you think of it? Obviously, this was a match to kind of prolong the program, not give Furnace and LaFon the belts right away. They wanted to keep it going, have Owen and Bulldog go over with the slammy assistance in a non-title.
The wrestling in this match felt a lot more like something we would see today than like something that we see in 1997 on Raw. Because the wrestling was very good. It wasn't a match that really, like, gripped me. I wasn't super compelled. It did make me want to see more of these teams. Because I was like, if they told a story and had something really good going into it, then this could be great. They didn't really... Did they even mention on commentary? Because I don't remember. Did they mention that Furnace and LaFon have victories over Owen and Bulldog? Like, did they mention any of the Survivor Series stuff?
Nope.
Because I don't remember them mentioning it. And I was thinking about it. Because... You know, they have pinned Owen and Bulldog, and they were the survivors at Survivor Series, so they have sort of a win over the tag team champions already, and, I mean, I don't know if they beat the Headbangers on Shotgun Saturday Night. I don't know if we'll ever find out, but Furnace and LaFon do seem to be on kind of a winning streak, and so it was interesting seeing this just kind of like thrown out there cold, because like I know that they go on to be title contenders or something at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when that happens, but I'm guessing fairly soon because they seem to be the next ones in line. So I was actually, and again, like talking about being clouded by current day Raw, I was really expecting Furnace and LaFont to win this.
Because by current standards, non-title equals victory for challengers.
Exactly, because that's the way to set up a number one contendership, right? And because I know that they go on to be contenders at some point in the near-ish future, I think. Yes, I'm not very certain because I don't know the timing of things that, you know, mm-hmm. I know story points. I don't know when they happen. So I was expecting, I was like, oh, okay, this is where Furnace and LaFon get another victory over Owen and Bulldog, and then maybe they'll get their title shot, because that's, like, the only story that they tell nowadays on Raw. And no, it turned out that, you know, Owen did hit whichever one. LaFon, I think, with the slammy, right?
It was LaFon.
Okay.
Whichever one.
Whichever
it's
one.
It's George and Adam all over again.
It's the short hair one that he hit with the slammy. And, one of my favorite things is he hits him with the slammy and then like passes it off to Clarence Mason, who's just like, no, I got this. I got this. Like their facial expressions during the handoff of the weapon were just beautiful. But no, I mean, I liked this, and it did make me want to see more of them just in terms of wrestling quality, because I think that their matches could be really, really good.
Yeah. Again, I don't really want to say anything that's going to give anything away, so I'll just say nothing.
Right. That's so the problem, is that, like, we can't really speculate on anything. I can speculate, but you have to just be like, we will see.
Yeah, I'm just the boring guy that stays quiet. Well, plus, because other people, like, some, like, you've obviously, I think we spoke about this on another podcast, and, I feel bad for the guy, because he's probably listened to this. Dave Buxton had tweeted us, and I'll say this the best way I can for people who watched around this time to understand what I was trying to do. So Sondra had asked me on a Patreon review of the Royal Rumble 2000, when Triple H walked in as WWF champion, how long's Triple H been champion? And for the sake of me not spoiling Raw and things that happen on Raw, I decided to say he's pretty much been champion since SummerSlam. And Dave Buxton decides to tag Sondra in a tweet and list all the times that the title has changed hands on television.
Thankfully, that's in 1999, so I will forget by then.
Oh, yeah, of course. But then he had the audacity to say to me, I watch these shows, so I've done research. I've fucking done research, motherfucker! What do you think I do before I watch these? So
I think he came across quite as snide as that. I think it was more
No. It was more like, just so you know, this is a... Like, me, the sort of trivia Nazi.
You're the
that
fanatic,
I am.
I know.
I'm the guy in What Culture, the office the other day. Somebody sent over a quiz and it was like 100 guys who've had the most matches in the WWF, and you have 5 minutes to do it, and I got 80 out of 100.
This does not surprise me whatsoever. Right?
But so when someone calls into question the fact that I would just think that Triple H held the title from SummerSlam to Royal Rumble, when everybody who's watched it knows the different things that happened, I take umbrage.
I know that you do.
And I am rightful to take my umbrage whenever I see fit to take my umbrage. Dave Buxton. But he did apologize, and then I felt really bad. So, you know, life.
The trials and tribulations of internet celebrity Kenny McIntosh.
No. What was I going to say? The thing about watching these shows now is that, like we were talking a minute ago about the fact that I can't really tell you anything that happens, mm-hmm. because that ruins it, but it's fun to hear Sondra speculate.
Well, it's kind of funny because, like, obviously the Royal Rumble being in the Alamo Dome this year and 20 years ago being what we're covering, it's funny when they actually spoil stuff from 20 years ago on things like Talking Smack, or like when Shawn Michaels came out on Raw and was talking about how he beat Psycho Sid 20 years ago or whatever. It's kind of fun to get tweets like, oh, Sondra, don't watch this segment because it'll ruin something. It's like, I've seen it. It's fine. Like, I can't really expect to avoid all spoilers from 20 years ago because that's a bit ridiculous. But, you know, I do make it a point not to, like, look up on Wikipedia what happens and whatnot. Like, if I can avoid finding out, then that's better.
Yeah, that is better if you can avoid it. Up next on Raw, we have... this whole show, we didn't really have backstage segments. There wasn't really much going on in the way of backstage.
It was
or anything,
too chaotic
so.
For backstage segments. That's one exactly. of the things, like, this Raw felt very spur of the moment, and, like, they didn't know what was going on. I think because it started so, like, strangely with, you know, Bret Hart not scheduled to be here, Stone Cold Steve Austin not scheduled to follow up on whatever Bret Hart said, right? And it just kind of felt like they were trying to play catch up the whole time, mm-hmm. which was great because it added to that sort of unpredictable spontaneity of the show. And that made it a lot more compelling for me, at least.
For sure. Then we got Bart Gunn versus Farouk. Bart Gunn, who is, you know, trying to find his way in the World Wrestling Federation without his brother, Billy, slash not his brother. And he has a match with Farouk. It's pretty standard fare, but the Nation of Domination, of course, you know, stick their nose in. We have Crush and PG-13 adding cheap shots to Bart, and then Farouk finishes the match off with the Dominator. The Dominator, which always makes me laugh, because it sounds like a Dominatrix's finisher.
Give it to Natalia.
God.
Can I say, Bart Gunn is so boring.
He is.
He is the blandest, like, loaf of white bread imaginable, right? Like, you can make a sandwich with him. Like, you can do a wrestling match with Bart Gunn, and it'll be fine. And, like, he'll keep the contents of the sandwich in. But wouldn't it be a little more exciting if he were at least, like, 7 grain or something? Like, he's just Wonder Bread.
He is. Anything else to add about Bart Gunn versus Farouk? Do you have anything to add?
I liked all of the Nation of Domination stuff in it, actually. Like, because they have... I mean, bless them, this would work better with a babyface that I actually cared about, right? But I don't know how many of those there actually are in the mid-card right now. Because, like, who's a mid-card babyface at this point? Like, Bart Gunn, Savio Vega... Who else even is there? Like, is there anyone else that would be interesting to have in
not
these matches?
Really.
Like, I mean, Goldust, but you don't want to put Goldust against Farouk for this kind of purpose. Like, you need someone that...
Alex the Pug Porto?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Alex the Pug Porto. We did see him once. But as I'm thinking about it, Bart Gunn might be one of the more interesting ones out of them just because he's had sort of a story since we started watching, but he's still so bland. I don't know. But I did like all of the Nation of Domination stuff because you have them, like, there are a bunch of people on the outside, right? Like, a bunch of people now. The Nation of Domination is fairly big, especially when you consider that it's just Farouk in a match. Like, there are, I mean, how many people are there at ringside with him? Like, 6?
Yeah, about 6.
It's a lot, though. I mean, it's more than just a manager and a tag team partner. It's quite a few. And, you know, Farouk yells at that lady again.
Well, she needs to do her job better.
Apparently. Like, she wasn't taking his coat off quickly enough or something. Like, he yelled at her at the Royal Rumble. He yelled at her here. I'm kind of curious what her deal is and why she's with the Nation. But...
She was diminished to coat duty.
She was diminished to coat duty, and she looks just, like scared. Like, Farouk is not a very nice leader of the Nation of Domination. But I did like that, you know, after Farouk yelling at them at the Royal Rumble, they're definitely kind of going all out and saying, yeah, we're going to help you out in these matches. I mean, Farouk should not need help against Bart Gunn.
No, he should be able to dispose of Bart Gunn pretty quick. I did want to mention before I forget, we get a great advert with Classy Freddie Blassie getting children to dance to music videos.
Oh yeah, we've seen that one quite a few times, though.
But I don't think I've brought it up because I keep forgetting to bring it up. But it makes me laugh every time I see it because
I brought it up the first time because that kid is dressed as Marlena at the end and it was weird.
That is weird. The kid dressed as Shawn Michaels is probably weirder.
True.
Vince McMahon returns to the ringside area, bringing Gorilla Monsoon with him, which again makes sense because Vince McMahon has went backstage to confer with the president of the WWF about what they're going to do. They come in. Gorilla Monsoon says that, you know, referee's decision has to be final. Steve Austin is the winner of the Royal Rumble, but if he thinks he's going to WrestleMania to face the champion, he's got another thing coming. There's going to be a four-way match with, you know, Undertaker, who was screwed at the Royal Rumble, Vader, who was screwed because they were both illegally eliminated by Austin, Bret Hart, obviously, who, if he is willing to come back, you know, Monsoon saying, I hope he hears this, and Steve Austin.
Who, I love that, by the way, that, you know, oh, I hope he hears this, and if he accepts... just to kind of sell, because he just quit.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. So he obviously, you know, makes this four-way match, which is going to take place at In Your House Final Four on February 16th. And then Steve Austin comes out with my favorite line. Do you know the line I'm going to say?
I can't remember.
Okay, this line.
And as I was watching it, I was like, oh, I need to write that down, and I didn't.
Here it is. Someone sins on the outside, and Austin says, you call yourself the gorilla, but you hee-haw like a jackass.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, God.
Oh, I mean, if I had written show notes for this episode, which I didn't because I had to watch it really quickly before I was leaving for work, so I don't actually have show notes. There were a couple things as I was, like, watching Retro Raw and eating and trying to get ready for work at the same time. I was like, oh, I wish I had time to write things down because that was so good.
It's, hee-haw like a jackass.
Hee-haw like a jackass. I love it. I love it so much. Can I just say how weird it was to hear Vince McMahon, like, or to see Vince McMahon and Gorilla Monsoon walking out to the Nation of Domination theme?
that was pretty
it
great.
It was kind of a bizarre sight, because they come out immediately after Farouk wins, and I don't know, it was just really strange. And then JR says at that point, ironically, on the day President Clinton's being inaugurated president, you know, the president of the World Wrestling Federation has an important announcement, because JR does not understand irony, and it drives me insane every single time.
It's great. Do you know what's funny? Like, it completely, I just remember this. When I was watching this Jackie movie earlier on today, and, you know, you're watching JFK getting his funeral,
mm-hmm.
and it struck me, and I was like, no matter what happens, Donald Trump will now have a procession and the American flag for his funeral.
Yeah, that's
shame
so
on you, America.
I didn't
that.
Do it.
Anyway, Austin is just going crazy. He's not happy. Then Bret turns up, and what I love about it is, like, JR's being told somewhere on his headset or something that, like, Bret's turn up, and you can see Bret come through the crowd, but you hear JR going, "Where is he? Where is he?" And then he jumps over the barrier where Lawler is, gets in the ring, gets the mic, and says, "I accept." And then as Austin's in the aisleway, Bret says, "We don't need to wait to February. We can go right now." And the two of them start brawling. Oh, it was so good.
Like, how is this not the actual story?
Right?
Is what I was thinking during the segment, because it really seemed like this is the actual story, is Bret Hart and Steve Austin.
And here's something I think WWE don't really get as right as they used to. Like, the Undertaker's music hits at the exact point of chaos that it should.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because everyone is, like, losing their mind over the brawl, and then the gong hits, then they lose their shit again, and then he comes out, and then what's interesting is he starts brawling with Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Because he's pissed that he's been fucked out of the title shot as well. Even the fucking Undertaker is mad that he didn't get the title shot.
Well, the Undertaker was raging yesterday because, you know, he got screwed out of this by Vader because Paul Bearer came and, you know, interrupted at the Royal Rumble, hit him over the head with the urn. Like, the Undertaker was so pissed he chokeslammed a referee and was fined his entire Royal Rumble purse. Apparently, we find out, I think during the next match, they'd say it on commentary that he was fined all of the money he would have made at the Royal Rumble because he illegally chokeslammed a referee, and there's no place for that in the World Wrestling Federation. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously the Undertaker is going to be pissed here.
So he starts brawling with Bret. It's all kind of going crazy, but we finally get some sort of decorum, and we get the Undertaker Austin main event. But, like, so much goes on, like, you get fuck it. But what's funny is, like, Undertaker at one point does his zombie sit up, but, like, the character is evolving, you know, as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that, like, you know, he still keeps a couple of little things from that, but doesn't keep everything, and, like, you know, in at the Rumble slash tonight, you know, there's so much more of a humanized side to him that he's angry at something. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not like. And it's funny because I was talking to Jamie Miller, one of my friends, who Sandra knows. That's why I'm referencing his surname.
That's true.
And he was talking to me about the Undertaker promo on Raw from last week, and he was saying that, like, if you're a wrestling fan, there's some things, if you're a long-time wrestling fan, that you just listen to an Undertaker promo, and you're kind of into it because you like the Undertaker and you've always liked him or whatever. But, like, when he was watching that with his wife, who's not super into wrestling, it's a bit cringy.
That's like, very if you're cringy.
If you're not into him, it's cringy. But whereas here, like, he's more relatable, I think. Like, they've made, I understand why he chokeslammed the referee.
Oh, I understand why he chokeslammed the referee. I mean, it wasn't really the nicest thing to do. And...
No, it was not.
I maintain that the Undertaker is kind of a heel. Like, but he kind of is, though, right? Because, like, in this match with Steve Austin, he kicks Steve Austin in the balls. So, again, the Undertaker always just kicking people in the balls. That's what I know.
The point being, no matter how you feel about him, is that there is progression, which is good.
There is. And, I mean, he does the zombie setup, like, a couple times in the match, but it seems almost like he's angrier. Like, because the Undertaker's character for, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Undertaker's character for ages has basically been no-selling offense and sitting up.
Pretty much.
Right? Like, I'm not wrong on that. So, it is interesting because he's still doing that, but he seems angrier about it. Like, the Undertaker still no-sells quite a bit.
Which is, but I think that's what's kind of interesting is, like, he's now getting to this point in his career where it's like he's having to change, but how much does he change? You don't want him to just become another wrestler
mm-hmm.
where he just does the same moveset, but how much of the old stuff does he keep? So you're going through this period where he's trying to kind of work it out of how much he's going to keep and how much he's not. And yeah, it's kind of interesting to watch that continue to evolve of, you know, does he go a bit too far this week? Does he not go enough this week? Because they're trying new things, you know? Mm-hmm. They're just trying new things and seeing how it works out. Sad Bat Undertaker was something they tried.
I miss the bat wings.
But Austin and Undertaker have a match. We cut at one point to the back where Bret Hart and Vader are being held apart by wrestlers backstage because, you know, they're part of the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vader ends up running out into the ring. Undertaker has fucking, you know, double vision because he realizes it. And turns around, chokeslams Vader. Then Bret runs out. All four of them are brawling. Crowd are going nuts. Bret and Austin are on the outside. Vader and Undertaker on the inside. Bret's watch comes undone. He's trying very, very difficultly to keep it from falling off.
Yeah.
Bret Hart has the best punches and kicks. Like, they're so good.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought this was just... I mean, you know... The match itself of Austin and Undertaker was just standard. You know, it was fine. But, like, the post-match thing, I thought they just set up the Final Four so well.
Yeah, they did. And my favorite thing about it, and I said before, is the detail that goes into all of this and how logical it is and how much all of it makes sense. Because Gorilla Monsoon making this Fatal 4-Way match makes absolute perfect sense, right? And it seems like this is way more interesting to me than the actual title. At this point, is like which one of these guys is going to get to face for the title. And I keep forgetting about Shawn Michaels in this instance because he's not the most interesting thing here, right? Like he's just kind of, well, not even there, not even on the show. But just the detail of why these guys are in the main event picture, because these are the guys that you would expect to be in a Fatal 4-Way match like this. I guess you would also kind of expect Sid to be in there. But the reason for this coming out of the Royal Rumble, and this is, you know, what kind of proves that the Royal Rumble was a great Rumble looking back on it for storytelling and for setting things up for the future, right? Like, the reason that Vader and Undertaker are in here is because they were illegally eliminated after Austin was out. He came back in and eliminated the two of them. So Diesel, who was also in the ring at the end, right? He's not in this because he got eliminated by Bret Hart.
Legally.
And it was legal. So there's no reason for him to be in this picture, right? But
because, also, who wants Diesel in this picture?
Well, nobody wants Diesel in this picture. But I mean, I'm just saying, though, that, you know, Diesel was also in that, you know, final fray in the Royal Rumble. So, you know, it's not just who was in there last. It's why they were in there and why they got eliminated. And, like, it's also Gorilla Monsoon paying attention to the rules because, you know, as we said in the Royal Rumble, you know, review thing that we did on Patreon, it was a Royal Rumble of shenanigans. There were so many shenanigans on that show, and which is probably why you and I loved it, because mm-hmm. we love shenanigans. They're the best. But there was
that thing is, it's like this Rumble. Like I read something the other day saying, oh, 97 is one of the worst Royal Rumbles. And I'm like, there's so much story. How can you dislike it?
Story. And that's what I like to see coming out of Royal Rumbles. Like, I understand people who wouldn't like it necessarily, especially with kind of the weird ending. And it's, I mean, some people don't like that. David McCutcheon hates shenanigans and non-finishes and that kind of stuff, right? And so,
yeah, he does.
I mean, I haven't talked to him to find out how he feels about the 97 Royal Rumble. I'm guessing he doesn't love that show nearly as much as you and I would, because that's not for him, right? But we love story so much. And, you know, I mean, Bayley versus Eva Marie is one of my favorite matches in NXT because of all of the shenanigans, right? Like, it was so good. And I really like the attention to detail and the fact that the president of the World Wrestling Federation, Gorilla Monsoon, is paying attention to the fact that there were all sorts of shenanigans. And so he wants to rectify that. And he wants to put things right. And he wants to still, like, exert some sort of control over the World Wrestling Federation. He's not just going to stand there and take it and, like, you know, let the wrestlers run wild. I mean, Steve Austin's sitting there, like, threatening him and stuff. So he's not like an authority Stephanie McMahon who's going to come out there and, like, berate everyone and make them look like children.
Well, do you know, here's the thing. So Vincent, the other thing that I thought was interesting was, so Brett calls out Vince at the beginning of the show, basically making it like he's the owner.
Right.
But then, so they give you this nod to real life, but then they bring out Gorilla Monsoon as president, which people know is not real, so we're back into storyline mode.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going in and out, they're giving you little nods and nudges here. But the key is, Steve Austin and Bret Hart are allowed to be rebellious characters. You know? Like, if today a wrestler quit and walked out on Stephanie, she wouldn't do a thing. She would just be like, I don't need them, and then they'd come crawling back. You know?
Well, because,
like,
she threatens to fire everyone every day anyway.
Yeah, and that's why, like, there's a great, you know, the segment that we saw in the Royal Rumble 2000 thing on Patreon was, you know, Mick Foley gets fired before the Royal Rumble, and The Rock stages a walkout, a mass walkout,
mm-hmm.
to get him back. When characters are allowed to stand up to people, like, people are more into them, you know?
Well, yeah, and I think that's the difference between the Raw and SmackDown authority figures that we're seeing today, right? Like, and Daniel Bryan has said this, you know, Daniel Bryan is more about letting the wrestlers be themselves, and he's there to facilitate it, which is, I think, what Gorilla Monsoon is doing here. And Vince McMahon, by not really doing anything, is kind of also being that character, right? And, you know, it's one of the frustrating things about current Raw is Stephanie's just all over the show and all over needing to control everything and be the big bad heel when it just kind of makes the wrestlers look smaller than her. Literally, sometimes. The camera angles, it's ridiculous.
I just think back to when Stephanie had a promo with AJ Lee. That's all you need to look at for camera angles.
I was there live.
Oh, God. Overall, though, this show, like I say, you know, obviously it's a thumbs up for me, but I this is my favourite episode of all the ones we've covered so far in terms of story. I just think they knocked it out of the park, and It's nice to see that even 20 years later, this whole Bret Hart, Steve Austin thing, like, holds up even more than I thought it would.
So this is exceeding your expectations?
100%.
That's cool.
And I think some of that's because, like, they really have regressed today, you know, in terms of how they present wrestling. And that's a shame. But, like, it's not that it's terrible. Like, it's still enjoyable, but I think, like, even, like for you, you probably admit, like, the stories are better here because they're actually telling fully formed stories that are intertwining. You know, they're allowing characters to breathe more and to do different things. And I think that's part of the reason why this probably stands out so much. And it's, I think the frustration in watching this is that if they put half of the effort they do in these kind of storylines into now, it could be, you know, for the guys, it could be so much bigger than it is. You know?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily that, like, the storytelling back then is always so much better than it is today, because I think, like, today there are certain stories that are really, really good. I don't think it happens quite as often, and I mean, in the older days of NXT, we used to see some really, really, really good stories that played out over a long time. We've kind of lost that in current NXT, right? Like, now that it's become more of, like, exhibition of stars and whatnot, it's just changed, right? It's just changed. But, I mean, there are still some stories that are very compelling to me today, like all the Daniel Bryan Miz stuff going on, all the, you know, mostly stuff on SmackDown. Again, like, I don't mean to just be like, SmackDown's better than Raw, but, like, for me, I am more compelled by the stuff on SmackDown than Raw. Mm-hmm. I would say Sami Zayn Braun Strowman is very good on Raw, but I think the way that they present characters in 1997 here is a lot more similar to the way that they present characters on SmackDown. I was having this conversation with a coworker last night. SmackDown reminds me a lot more of that because the roster in 1997 is very thin. Like, you see that in the Royal Rumble. They had to fill out the Royal Rumble with a bunch of guys from AAA just to fill up the Royal Rumble, right? Like, the SmackDown roster currently is very thin, but I'm a lot more compelled by people that I never thought I would find compelling. And the stories are so good that I just don't care that there aren't that many people. So I guess, like, that's the comparison I would make. And I don't think that SmackDown is perfect by any means. And some of the stuff is cheesy and whatnot, but SmackDown's reminding me more of Retro Raw in terms of storytelling and the way that people are presented as stars.
Makes sense. It makes sense. I'm guessing your thumb is up for this episode.
Oh, I'm so thumbs up for this episode. It was great.
So that is it for this week. We will be back next week for another episode of Raw. But next week, we're going to have... I'm pretty sure next week is Royal Rumble Raw. Let me just check this. I'm pretty sure it is.
Royal Rumble Raw?
Royal Rumble Raw, I think. Let me just double check this here.
What is Royal Rumble Raw? Or can you tell me?
It's not. It's not. I think it's 2 weeks away. But Royal Rumble Raw is basically when the USA Network wanted to put something on originally, the USA Network had wanted to air something where they play some of the pay-per-view.
Oh.
And the pay-per-view companies were like, nope, you're not doing that. So they ended up putting a show together at the Sky Dome.
Wow.
So it's pretty fun.
Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting.
Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And find us on Patreon for the Royal Rumble review and, you know, tons of other bonus content. There's a bunch of stuff up there. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And we did get asked this on Twitter, Kenny, and I think that we should address it. We're not going to do more Shotgun Saturday nights, right?
Here's the thing, right? Sandra played along with it. I'll be honest, like, the truth of the matter is that timing-wise and schedule-wise, it's just not working out for us. And the problem is that if we don't do it straight away, there's not really a point in doing it. Because, like, when we were doing the Rumble review, it was like if we hadn't done the Shotgun thing, we're probably going to miss that one. And then there's only really, like, two left. So you can watch them on Daily Motion. They're fun. But, like, the first two is pretty much all we're going to be able to do. But
I mean, I will say, I was... Because I did sort of half-watch the January, I think it was 18 episode of Shotgun Saturday Night. I don't remember the date. I think it was the 18th. And I sort of half watched it. And I mean, I can sum up my thoughts in a minute here. Terry Funk is mental. It wasn't as out there as I wanted it to be, I guess, because I heard that it was so controversial and it was just like, duh, what's going on? And it wasn't nearly as controversial as I expected it to be, I guess. I mean, he calls Ted Pettengill's mother a whore, which was interesting. So that was kind of funny. And like, oh, I mean,
such a Teddy Funk thing to do.
He was swearing some, but did he even say fuck?
I think he did, but it was bleeped.
Oh, well.
And he had the brawl with Steve Austin. And
yeah, he had the brawl with Steve Austin. Like, the thing with Shotgun Saturday Night, and the reason that I'm so frustrated with Shotgun Saturday Night, right? Like, we watched the first episode of Shotgun Saturday Night, Sisters of Love. I'm like, there are flying nuns. This is great. I'm so into this. Sisters of Love are my new favorite thing, right? What do we get the next week? No Sisters of Love that were promised to me. We get the Headbangers instead. Not into it. Not into it at all.
To be fair, you did get to see them get arrested.
I did get to see them get arrested, and that was a delight, but seeing them get arrested outside a Disney store is not the same as seeing them fight Furnace and LaFon. And we didn't even get the Headbangers versus Furnace and LaFon. We got like 30 seconds of the Headbangers versus Furnace and LaFon before they ran out of time on the broadcast. So, Then what do they promise us for the next week, Kenny? What's the big hook? Because the other big hook for week two was Sunny's sex tape, which turned out to be her fucking Elmo. So, yeah. Like, literally, her fucking Elmo. So, then the next week, they're like, Goldust is pregnant! Goldust is going to give birth right here in the ring, and it's going to be this big thing, and it's like the take on the Vanity Fair cover from 1991, by the way. Not recent, like we were talking about that. It wasn't a recent thing. It was 1991 that Vanity Fair cover was. So then, it's like, Goldust is going to give birth. What doesn't happen or even really get referenced other than one throwaway line on commentary? No pregnant Goldust. He's in a match. Shotgun Saturday Night is lame. Not doing it.
Yep. If you're not going to deliver us pregnant Goldust, we're not going
to
do it.
I wanted to see what they were going to do, and they did nothing. Like, it was going to be terrible if they tried to do Goldust giving birth. It would have been no better than Sunny fucking Elmo in a sex tape. But I just wanted to see what they were going to do. But they did nothing.
Nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Robert and I are going to be getting together this weekend. We're going to have a UK title tournament review on Patreon, so look out for that. Ahmed Johnson Part 2 should be up the next couple of days, if it's not up already, but it'll be up at some point. And I'm getting access to my old laptop, which has a shit ton of old interviews, so we'll be good on the interview train for the next few weeks. So Thanks for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend, you sexy motherfuckers.
Bye.